From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in a series of tunnels that run underground across the University of Rochester campus. Those tunnels, which span hundreds of feet, are painted by students advertising events or activities. It's a tradition. They do it all the time. But writing for City Newspaper, third-year UR student Efwa Ajari-Kumi reports that the tunnels have recently become a battleground for political discourse about China. And it all began when students painted messages supporting the Hong Kong protests. As Ajari-Kumi writes, the messages backed autonomy for Tibet and Taiwan and condemned reported ethnic cleansing. But a day later, those messages were gone. Students aligned with the Chinese Students and Scholars Association had painted their own messages over the previous ones, portraying China as a peaceful and loving nation. That upset some of the original artists, who said they wanted to show their support for the people that they thought were being oppressed. Their artwork was soon back, and the debate playing out in paint was also playing out online in social media message threads and comment sections, in a campus lounge where flags of countries represented the student body were displayed, and over a speaker invited to campus by a student group, also via a petition in which more than 600 students demanded the university condemn what they view as censorship by the Chinese Students and Scholars Association. Meanwhile, Chinese students say they were beginning to feel unsafe on campus. As Ajari-Kumi reports, quote, a war of words at the University of Rochester over paintings and flags is a far cry from black-clad students hurling gasoline bombs and bricks at the riot police storming Hong Kong University campuses. The U of R is not under siege. The sanctity of higher education here is intact. End quote. But the debate at UR extends beyond world affairs to free speech on campuses, respecting different cultures, how to express political disagreement, how to push back against stereotypes of people and groups, and how to heal divides. This hour, we discuss all of that with our guests. And let me salute Efwa Ajari-Kumi, that third-year student who wrote that outstanding piece for City Newspaper. And she's with us here in studio to further explore the issue. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Samson Howell, who is president of the Chinese Students Association at the University of Rochester. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks.
Also with us is Selena Zhu, who is Selena is president of the Hong Kong Students Association at the University of Rochester. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And Matthew Burns is dean of students at the University of Rochester. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Well, Efwa, I want to start with you. It was your piece that sparked our attention here. What has it been like on campus, and what moved you to write about what's been happening there?
So I think starting with the tunnel piece, which is what caught City's attention, really that was more so the climax of events that had been happening since the beginning of the semester, starting with a Tibet event that was organized by the College Republicans in September. So that...
It's okay. Just make sure you're right on the microphone. There you go. Go ahead.
Thank you. So that really began the tensions, and things kind of got more intense from there. We had a pretty hectic confrontation at Starbucks between some Tibetan monks who were on campus. And so every event that happened next was sort of informed and made more serious by what had happened before. So in October, there was an event on Uyghurs, also held by the College Republicans. And so you have a series of events that are making Chinese students begin to feel like there is a lot of conversation happening about controversial issues in their country, and just kind of making them feel like they were very much in the spotlight and not in a good way. But then at the same time, you have students from Tibet, from Hong Kong, and from Taiwan, who because of other incidents were also beginning to feel like they were not really being heard for the suffering that their countries were feeling. Because when the Tibet event happened, there were some Chinese students who felt that the event should have had a different structure. And so really trying to showcase both sides of that issue and just make some room for an actual dialogue was what I hoped to do with the piece.
I must say, I mean, I'm by no means an expert in understanding the complexities of these issues. And part of the reason we're having this conversation today is just sort of for my own edification as the host to learn, to sit back and listen and learn. But your piece was sort of a model in the kind of journalism that doesn't carry a tinge of bias, at least not perceptibly to me. What beyond, you know, sort of just reporting on the events, do you think either the piece has helped accomplish or do you hope to help facilitate? You know, what's the ideal, you think, going forward on campus?
I think I really hope to show pretty much where everyone was coming from, because it seemed to me that when I was talking to students on both sides of the discussion, they felt that there was this sort of animosity from the other side that really, when I talked to the other side, it really wasn't there. It was really just more of everyone wanted to be heard and wanted their perspective to be appreciated. And so I wanted to capture everyone's values in the piece in that way.
Isn't that interesting? In that sometimes when there is heated emotion on any issue, the people on, if we're going to bifurcate this, on both sides, assume the others may view them as inhuman or in a caricatured way.
Yes, exactly.
Mostly, though, I think people on any side of an issue just want to feel like at least they are heard mm-hmm. and understood as opposed to caricatured. Mm-hmm. So again, I salute you for that. I think it's important work. And let me ask the students who are here with us. I'll start with Samson Howe, president of the Chinese Students Association of the University of Rochester. Can I ask you for some general thoughts about what life is like on campus now and maybe the concerns that you have about some of these events, and then we'll get a little bit more specific.
Yeah, I just feel like the overall atmosphere, especially from last semester, was kind of, I feel like students from Hong Kong, students from Tibet, students from China, they're all feeling kind of unsafe. That's like the overall big vibe. And at the same time, that's due to plenty events, plenty dialogue and plenty conflict that happens during last semester. Last semester, we had a conflict around Starbucks. We had a conflict for the Tibet event and for the Uyghur event, Hong Kong event. For all of those events, that kind of intensified. That kind of intensified the conflict between the students. And overall, I feel like there are a lot of misunderstanding mm-hmm. Between groups, especially for the later on the semesters. It was kind of concentrated between the Hong Kong Student Association and the Chinese Student Scholar Association. And I feel like there are rooms for dialogue to move forward. And that's something that we can definitely do some point during this semester.
Do you think the students from the various backgrounds are making an effort to understand one another, or is it sort of hot rhetoric and not very much bridge building?
That's the bigger picture, and the bigger conflict is about the so-called censorship. And the students do feel like there is a censorship. Some students do feel like there's an oppression for freedom of speech. However, I also do see some of the students, most students are willing to listen from the other side, but there are some students maybe are coming into a dialogue with a certain answers, and that kind of intensified the problem, because the point of freedom of speech is to listen, is to have an open mind to listen to others. And I feel like as the stories kind of moves on, and as more events coming up, there are more and more people willing to listen to each other, and things will turn out better and better.
Okay, and in a moment we'll get Selena's perspective as president of the Hong Kong Students Association. Samson, if you can generalize, and I want to be careful because I know there's a wide range of perspectives here and backgrounds and political viewpoints, but generally speaking, for Chinese students who feel misunderstood, what do you think that either the stereotype about them is that might be wrong, or what do you think that they fear people don't understand?
The biggest stereotype and misunderstanding is that we against Hong Kong. People think that we against Hong Kong's human rights movement. And that is such a big stereotype and misunderstanding, because sometime maybe at Hong Kong Student Association's events that kind of supports Hong Kong people's human rights and democracy, maybe you don't see a lot of Chinese students, but that doesn't mean that we don't support them. There can be a lot of reasons behind that, but that's like the biggest stereotype among all students during last semester.
Well, let me bring in Selena Xu, who is president of the Hong Kong Students Association at the University of Rochester. Again, I'll ask you for some just general comments about how life on campus has been recently and how you perceive some of these events, and then we'll get more specific.
I would say last semester was actually a lot of stuff happened. Mm-hmm. And it actually pretty much started with Hong Kong Student Association and Chinese Student Association co-hosting an event regarding the current situation in Hong Kong back in September. And that's how the events after that started. It's the starting point was actually from that event. But that event in general, I would say it was, we were actually trying to build a bridge, like to facilitate discussions among like people on campus. There are a lot of different people, like international students and domestic students, who are interested in knowing more about this topic. So it was like actually great to see the student community willing to listen and understand students' perspectives from, I would say, like two different groups of like ideas. So it would be like it was nice to see those discussions going on, even though like those different events happen. It's still a way to see that people are aware of what's happening in other places in the world.
Do you feel, generally speaking, that Chinese students do support human rights in Hong Kong?
I would say some students, they are actually willing to know, and some of them even reach out to us, like saying that they understand what Hong Kong students are thinking and what people are experiencing there. So it's like there are also a lot of students who might not really know that too well, so they don't really want to comment on that. Mm-hmm. And I totally respect that. But it's also nice to see those students who are willing to take a step forward to come to us and to engage in those discussions. So there are definitely students who are interested in that.
And Selena, let me ask you what I asked Samson. I mean, I think, and maybe it's just because lately I've been involved in a lot of sort of media training, and I'm thinking a lot about the way people react in hot situations where they don't feel understood. I mean, everyone's desire is to be understood. What do you think those who might either oppose this kind of movement or appear to oppose it misunderstand about students in your position?
I would say the main thing is people misunderstand the word Free Hong Kong. Like, it's kind of like a really common phrase that we use to express like in this whole movement that's going on in Hong Kong. And then a lot of students on campus, I know they have like kind of concerns to how we like kind of phrase this this wording, like using the word Free Hong Kong. Like, what are we trying to free? Like, is that like a sovereignty issue or like just simply like authority thing? So it's like, it's some like kind of stereotype, I would say, like people thinking that we are like Hong Kong students on campus trying to put something forward to seek independence, so-called independence. But we're also trying to, like Hong Kong Student Association, trying to say that this is not the case. We're not trying to bring forward something like seeking independence idea. We're just simply there to say that people are fighting for like the restoring of the system, like one country, two systems, some ideas like that. So it's, I would say this is the main idea that people kind of misunderstood over the past semester.
Sure. So it sounds like if I have this correct, just the word free can trip some people up. Even though it seems simplified, it's more complex than that.
Yeah.
And it might lead even ostensible supporters of your movement to think that the movement is about things it might not be about.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like there is an effort to understand from most students?
Yeah. I mean, it's not an idea easy to understand because, like, you really have to know, like, the history of, like, mm-hmm. The handover of Hong Kong and, like, the whole system that it has been working, and then how, like, recent events actually build up to this point. So it's, like, a lot of, like, learning in this whole development of events.
Okay. Well, let me ask the students then for their thoughts on what the appropriate response, if any, from an administration is. Because, you know, just sort of looking from the outside, there is probably an ideal of upholding free speech when it is as far as it goes and is appropriate and is not endangering. And there's probably debates about where those lines are. So, Selena, what's the approach from the administration or response? Are you satisfied with what you've seen? I mean, how do you feel about that?
So I totally understand, like, how the administration replied. Like, regarding, for example, the flag situation, like it was also like a heated debate in campus. And I also noticed how the administration actually sent out an email regarding that and kind of like also trying to say that the school respects like people's basically freedom of speech, like what people painted on the walls and like those incidents kind of going around. But I think, like, I don't know, this flags incident could be like more complicated than that, and probably there are underlying reasons.
Can you describe the flag incident a little bit more for listeners who don't know?
Okay, so the flag incident was basically like Hong Kong flag and Taiwan flag being moved out of like the usual like the display of like the flags in the flag lounge, and they're being recategorized into other countries and regions, if I'm correct. Like, that's right, now it's actually in the category of other countries and regions. So it was a little bit confusing because they're kind of being separated out. So we weren't too sure about what was happening. And we also got a response that it's due to like the annual flag arrangement that's also related to the International Education Week. But probably like the administration side could kind of explain that a little bit more.
Can I turn to Matthew for a little bit more on that, the Dean of Students at the University of Rochester? Go ahead.
Sure. So the two things were separate, actually. They're being conflated. But once a year, we change the flags. We have a lounge in the student union where we display flags from every country from which we have students. We also display indigenous peoples' flags and territory flags from the U.S. Over the course of the last 25 years, that lounge has always had some controversy associated with it because these are geopolitical entities. So which flags do you fly? In which order do you fly them? And according to what criteria? And so that has been an evolving issue over the course of the last 25 years. And a couple of years ago, we had made the decision to fly the flags that were recognized countries, member states, and non-member entities from the UN. Hong Kong and Taiwan are not recognized by the UN, and according to the flag protocol that we adopted, wouldn't be flying with all of the other flags that were UN recognized. And so we created this other category, other regions and countries, where we flew the two flags, because we didn't want to not fly the flags. We had in the past before we adopted the UN strategy, and we didn't want to take them down. But it didn't make sense in the current protocol to fly them with the other UN countries. And so that happened to occur this past year, right in the middle of all these other programs going on. And so
some might perceive it as political, as a statement of some kind.
Absolutely. And I
can understand
that.
Wasn't intended to be.
No, absolutely. No, we had this planned months ago before any of these programs were planned. And that's difficult for some people to believe, but it's actually the case. And so it was an unfortunate coincidence, but it happened to occur at the very same time.
Well, can I ask Selena, do you accept that explanation?
I mean, right now, listening to that, I would say I understand what the perspectives of the administration side is. But yeah, there was kind of a controversy because, like, honestly, it was just happening right in the middle of everything. And people were having all their eyes on the flags. And it was a little bit difficult.
And all of a sudden, yeah. So did you want the administration to make a political statement? Do you find that appropriate?
I would say it's hard to take any sides. So it's probably the easiest way is to stay more like as neutral as possible, because honestly, there are a lot of students. It's like diversity of students, and it's really hard to kind of like take sides or like kind of show support to one side and then neglecting another side's views.
Well, I really admire that, because, and I'll get Samson's take on this incident and then maybe his view on how the administration has reacted to all this in a moment. But I think, Efwa, from your reporting, it's clear to me that there are some students who would want even Selena to go further and say, well, hell yes, we want the administration to make a statement. We want a statement, even if it's political, because human rights aren't supposed to be political. We want that. It sounds like Selena is saying, we understand how precarious this is. We understand the desire of neutrality. Is it fair to say, though, some students supporting these movements would want more from the administration?
Yes, absolutely. A lot of the students I spoke to for the story, particularly some of those who had been painting in the tunnels, did so, you know, to be political, and they were kind of calling for a more political statement from the administration.
Well, Selena, what would you say to your fellow students who are saying, look, I support your movement? How you should be telling them to tell the administration to get on board.
Yeah, this is like the thing that I experience. Like a lot of people who they really care about the situation and they really are showing support, and I really appreciate that. But at the same time, like what Hong Kong students on campus are more concerned is like, yes, something's happening on campus, but what's happening back at home is way more serious than that. And it's more like we want to raise awareness, but the campus being political does not really affect like our like the state of our hometown. So honestly, it's more like we appreciate the support, but from our side, we hope people to know more about this.
Matthew, I have to say that sounds like she's embracing the complexity of the situation and understanding maybe the spot the administration's in. Do you have an appreciation for that perspective?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I think I know Selena the least of the three students here, but you know, as controversial as this is, and I've had a lot of difficult conversations with our students. I think that's typical of the University of Rochester student. People get caught up in the argument, but in the end, I think there is an understanding on campus of the complexity of this and of the necessity to make sure, as the administration, to make sure that whoever needs to be heard or wants to be heard is heard. That's our role, not necessarily in taking sides. And I think Selena is absolutely right. What would be the purpose of taking sides anyway? The University of Rochester is not going to have that great an effect on the situations throughout the world. But what we can do is allow for discussions of those incidents so that our students, when they go out into the world, they can make that change, right? I think that's probably the purpose of the administration here.
Samson, how do you view the administration's response to these many issues?
I mean, I do think the school definitely can do much, much more than what the school has already done. Not from a political aspect, because I do think school don't necessarily need to take a stand on any political issue around the world. But from a basic human rights, from a basic democracy understanding, because that's something that I believe is universal standard, universally should be the same, that the school definitely should take a stand on that. For instance, for the covering tunnel issues, some of the students I know from Chinese Student Scholar Association covering other people's work that supports Hong Kong and Hong Kong movement, that should be definitely talked about through school.
Okay, so listeners, if you're just joining us here, we're talking about what's happening at the University of Rochester, but it sort of reflects debate and conversation among citizenry, among student groups around the world when it comes to understanding events in China, Tibet, Hong Kong, and frankly, some of the conflicts and political movements and human rights movements. And Efwa, I'm going to ask you to tell us a little bit about the petition that more than 600 students signed as well, that I think, cast the unidentified student artists, I guess, as the petition says that they were victims of Chinese oppression too. Is that right, reading in your story?
Sort of. So kind of as Samson was saying earlier, a lot of for instance, the attempt of the Chinese Students Association to get the Uyghur event cancelled or modified was seen as an example of censorship and sort of oppression. Mm-hmm. The confrontation that happened at Starbucks, where Tibetan monks were made to feel uncomfortable because of the actions of some Chinese students, was seen again as oppression. And so there was a building sense that people were not feeling safe. So by the time the flag incident rolled around and Taiwan and Hong Kong flags were moved, this just seemed like another thing on top of everything else. So students were kind of, calling for essentially a reversal of that and to feel more safe on their campus.
Sure. And Samson, again, trying to understand the reality, which is more complex than some of the stereotypes. Is it your concern that one of the stereotypes, at least sometimes I hear more in sort of American media, less in this situation, but is there a stereotype that students from mainland China are sort of reflexively pro-Chinese government and reflexively anti-Hong Kong or anti-Tibet. Is it your fear that that stereotype exists?
I mean, that stereotype apparently does exist.
Okay.
And I did not realize that until last semester.
Is that right?
And I think it is true that those stereotypes exist, but it's also possible for us to make a better approach to those students to let them know more about us. And that's what we're trying to do, and that's what the Chinese Student Association is trying to do as well. So as many have said about the Hong Kong events, the Uyghur events, seemingly students think that the student club, the Chinese Student Association, are kind of helping the Chinese students who they think are pro-Beijing, pro-the Chinese government, which is not necessarily true. But there are plenty of Chinese students that feels unwelcomed as they fly from 7,000 miles away to here to study, to be open-minded, to learn more from Western media, to learn more from the Americans. They do feel very, very unwelcomed. They do feel like the hospitality is not very, very present at that moment. And that's why we were kind of making that case and helping people to hear about the Chinese voices around this campus.
Okay. Selena, do you have some appreciation or concern about the students who might from mainland China who might feel unwelcome, as Samson says?
Yeah, I know quite some mainland China students myself, and I know it's a struggle. Like, people kind of, like, after all the discussions that have been going on, people seem to, like, start to label students in some ways. But at the same time, like, what you see, like, people commenting on students from China on Facebook, it's probably also, like, similar thing happening in, like, other probably WeChat groups, like, just that we don't know. So it's, like, kind of difficult, but it's also understanding that students might feel unwelcome because, honestly, it's a difficult issue to talk about.
After our only break, we're going to explore what happens from here. Now that you've kind of got the picture of what's been happening on campus, and again, we'll link to the outstanding reporting in City Newspaper from Efwa Ajari-Kumi, who's a third-year student at the University of Rochester and a contributing writer to City Newspaper. Samson Howe is here, president of the Chinese Students Association at the University of Rochester. Selena Xu is president of the Hong Kong Students Association at the University of Rochester. And their dean of students at the U of R's, Matthew Burns, is here with us as well. We'll take that break and come right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, the new housing section of Rochester City Court is designed to give tenants more power to stand up to their landlords. These are cases in which landlords aren't fixing up deteriorating properties, and tenants often feel like, well, there's nothing they can do about it. That's supposed to change. Now, some landlords have warned us of unintended consequences, but tenants say this puts them on more even footing. We'll explore it next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So, as we open up to some listener feedback, which we'll get to in a moment here, I also want to hit one more incident that got a lot of publicity and we had not talked about on this program, and that's what happened with the Eastman School. And I think it was a challenging situation for Jamal Rossi and the team at the Eastman School. And listeners might know of the news that the Eastman School of Music, part of the university, of course, agreed to go forward with an orchestral tour of China, despite that country's refusal to grant visas to three members of the orchestra, three South Korean members of the orchestra. And the school later reversed course, canceled the tour after there was an outcry, frankly, by students, alumni, and the wider Rochester community, with many critics accusing the university, in the simplified version of this, it was, well, you are bowing to China on an issue where you should have stood up and said, no, all students are coming. Well, they did reverse course on that. And I want to get the take of our panel on that before we kind of work through some other issues. Matthew Burns, that was a challenging spot for the school. I mean, we know Jamal Rossi well. What did you make of that and the decision there?
Well, I think, it's interesting that these things are happening. And as much as it seems like they're all related, they're not. That tour, we weren't able to procure the appropriate permission to go into the country because it wasn't just our going in and giving a free concert. There were tickets being sold. And so it was a different type of a visa that we needed that we couldn't procure. And the Chinese government had a policy against that for years. Jamal, I think, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think he was really hoping to get permission to go. And so was up to the last minute really trying to get that. And so, unfortunately, we weren't able to get that. And we had to reverse course on that. But that was all happening and in the works, again, prior to all of this. Everything happened at the same time on campus, though, and so it seems all related. But I think that's my understanding of it. Now, the Eastman School is different from the college, and so, like I said, I don't want to put words in Jamal's mouth, but that's my understanding of the
sure.
situation.
Sure, and do you understand why some students saw the event in the lens that they did?
Oh, absolutely. Why wouldn't you? Right? It's occurring right in the middle of everything else. So I think that's just natural to assume that that students are going to think that.
Okay. I'll ask the students on the panel how they feel. Samson, what did you make of that incident?
I've heard like so many stories about this. One story that I heard is the school have applied for the visas. The school officials have applied for those visas, but the students never applied. And the school officials, that's one of the stories I heard, that the school officials feels like those students have a chance of being rejected. That's why the student were never applied. Mm-hmm. So I've heard different stories about this. And of course, students will think this has something to do with other stuff, Hong Kong stuff, Tibet stuff, because it is right in the middle of everything. So, yes.
Do you think that was coincidental, that it was right in the middle of it?
I think this issue is comparatively separate than mm-hmm. other issues that's happening in River Campus.
Okay. Selena, what did you think?
I mean, I'm not, I didn't closely follow this whole, the thing that happened over Eastman. So I don't really have a lot of comments on
okay.
that. But the dean said, like, it just happened in the middle of everything. That's why people just connected things together. So it's hard to say.
Okay. Effa, what did you make of that?
I think this event, like all the others, presented again an opportunity for students of the University of Rochester to really ask ourselves, like, who are we? And what does this say about who we are? And I think that's why the Eastman event blew up as it did and got conflated with everything else, because in all of this, we're sort of being forced to confront our values and actually just ask, you know, what kind of school do we want to be? And I think a lot of students felt like, you know, do we want to be the kind of school that says that, you know, because South Korean students can't go, we're going to preserve the rights of the majority to still go and enjoy that tour, or do we want to stand together? And I think a lot of people saw it as that issue, which was also playing out on the River Campus.
Sure. And before we get to some listener feedback, some on the subject of values, I know during our brief break you mentioned that the kind of the subject of values comes up. How, Efwa? How do you see that?
So when I spoke with anthology professor John Osberg, one thing he mentioned was that a lot of the reason that people were not seeing eye to eye was because different values were clashing and really being considered as, let's say, more important, or that they should be prioritized, right? So for the side of Western students and the Hong Kong movement, there's really a push for the right to freedom and for certain freedoms. And then when I spoke to Chinese students, there was much more a push for unity and to sort of prioritize certain duties and like a responsibility to the state and for that kind of unity. And I think Samson and Selena can explain more, but that was really the tension that I saw emerging.
Well, here is a note from a listener named Alex who says, an interesting example of a clash of culture, Western liberal enlightenment ideals in Hong Kong versus Eastern Confucian ideals of community first in mainland China. Who is to judge which is morally correct? Is that a fair framework, generally speaking, you would say?
Yes, that is what I saw in contention. I guess the other thing that also plays into that is while you can examine this on that philosophical level, there is also what is happening on the ground, which is, you know, real people having violence used against them on both sides. And so that really heightens things where we feel like we need to come to a decision on what's going to happen.
Okay, Selena, do you see again, largely speaking, a tension between what might be called Western, more liberal values, and perhaps Hong Kong in that category, vis-a-vis China, a collective ideal. I mean, is that too broad, or do you think that that is the correct framework of values here?
I think so. This is like the discussion that has been going on campus too. Hmm. Like back in the event that happened in September when we discussed the situation of Hong Kong, some people actually raise this kind of idea too, like how like the fight for democracy and like that kind of collectivity in China, it's kind of like it's conflicted. So it's complicated, and it's always there between these two groups of students.
Can they coexist?
Some people believe that this kind of idea of democracy shouldn't be working in like Eastern countries like China. That's what I heard from some students' opinions. And like the main reason is because this kind of Western value, that they so-called Western value, mm-hmm. should not be in Eastern countries. That's their standpoint. I mean, I personally don't understand that. And it's probably a long way to go for two groups to mutually understand each other.
Okay. Samson, do you agree that that framework is fair?
I think that framework is fair. And I think that provides a very, very interesting dynamic on this campus. It's kind of like the current Democrats and Republicans. Democrats tend to think in groups and Republicans tend to think individually. And that's how the kind of dynamic between the so-called Eastern values and Western values. And I think people can start understanding each other. That's why CSA started this open dialogue with the Hong Kong Student Association back in the beginning of last semester.
Okay. But you see a possible harmony, even when you look at Hong Kong vis-a-vis China. Are those values in conflict enough that there cannot be sort of an ongoing marriage between China and Hong Kong? Or is there a way to sort of peacefully coexist?
There is a way, but like just like Selena said, it's going to be a long-term process. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be just solved in 1 year or 2 years. That's a big cultural clash that kind of going to last like 30 years, 50 years. Then at that time, people maybe will start understanding each other as a group.
Let me hit two other points from listeners that have come up. And one is from Matthew Burns. But first, I'll ask you this, Samson, because some listeners have asked, you know, for students generally speaking from mainland China, how much influence do you feel from your government? And again, I think one of the stereotypes is that, you know, you're essentially lacking agency for yourself, that you are acting on behalf of a government. So if you are supportive of the Chinese government, then you are essentially an arm of the Chinese government as opposed to an individual with agency. How do you view that?
I mean, I'll be lying if I say there's completely zero pressure. And indeed, the Chinese Students and Scholar Association is sponsored by the Chinese government. Mm-hmm. And comparing to that, we're not sponsored. We're completely school, student, government organizations. We have funds from the school. But I would be lying if I say I have literally zero influence from the Chinese government. But what I'm here for is as an individual from the University of Rochester. And I do think University of Rochester provide a minimum influence from wherever else.
Okay, and so I want to make sure I understand that a little bit more. When you mm-hmm. say that you'd be lying if you said there was no pressure, mm-hmm. what does that pressure feel and look like when you do feel pressure?
I mean, the pressure here is very, very minimum. It's barely anything. But when I do feel it, maybe... maybe when I say something that's not necessarily in line with what they may think or they may want us to think, mm-hmm. and that's where that comes from.
You'll hear from them? You'll hear from the government?
I will not.
You will not? Okay.
I will not.
Okay.
Maybe because I'm not influential enough. But as a student, as a leader on this campus, sometimes I do feel some minimum pressure
okay.
here and there.
So when you say you feel pressure, our listeners shouldn't take that to mean that you're getting messages from the Chinese government every day on what to say or what to think.
No, but I mean more, and even that, sometimes from a student life aspect, because there are CCP members as undergraduate students here on campus, and maybe saying something, not from a pressure from government necessarily, maybe it's pressures from students as well, right? They may think differently than what I think, and some members maybe in CSA or in CSSA. That I don't know, but maybe some pressure from students as well.
So that Samson's position is president of the Chinese Students Association. Selena is president of the Hong Kong Students Association at the University of Rochester. Do you feel any even occasional outside pressure about how you represent yourself, your views, what you are saying publicly, etc.?
I personally feel not really have like that kind of pressure, but it's more like some other Hong Kong students could probably be a little bit like concerned about the role they're taking in this, like the events that have been developed in University of Rochester. And that kind of pressure, it's more like they don't know what will happen. It's kind of unsure, like just like Samson said, there could be like students that are part of like this, they're actually CCP members that we just don't know, and like what we kind of represent Hong Kong in this school, like the stands we're taking could probably be like kind of observed in some ways. So there are definitely Hong Kong students who are concerned about this when we kind of speak our opinions on campus.
Let me get a message from a listener via social media who's listening, because I think it will allow Matthew Burns to kind of address another kind of stereotype. But before I read that, 13,000 undergrads, something like that. What's the number of undergrads at U of R?
No, we only have about 5,500.
I'm sorry. Oh my gosh, my math. I was promised there'd be no math. 5,500.
A similar number of graduate students, but
okay, so maybe in the 12,000 total range of students.
Yeah.
Okay. See, that's better.
You got
for
it.
Me.
There you go.
Math. What percentage of that 12,000 total students is international?
Graduate, I can't really speak to. I can speak more accurately to undergrads. And for the last several years, we've been bringing in about 30% or so.
I was going to say about a third, under a third?
Yeah.
And then roughly half or more of those students of the international portion, the cohort, comes from China. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. So maybe 15 in the high teens percentage total in the undergrad population. It's a sizable population.
Yeah, mid-teens, right.
Okay, so Jim on Twitter says, Evan, keep in mind that university enrollment from U.S. students are declining and university dependence on foreign governments is increasing and they don't want to rock the boat. Is that oversimplifying the case, or do you feel fealty to the Chinese government because, you know, a significant portion of the students come from China?
I think the university is a complicated place, right? So I think there are folks at the university who are looking at our international student population and all the realities that brings. For my part, as the dean of students, though, nestled in the college, I can say there's not one time that I felt any pressure to be for or against our Chinese students or any other student population on campus. I'm left free to support the students in the way that I think is best. So I can honestly say that I've never felt any pressure to support one group of students above another.
Okay. So in F was reporting, you make an important distinction here. While the stakes are certainly high in Hong Kong, in China, Tibet, here that debate can be emotional, but we are not seeing the same humanitarian crisis here. At the same time, we understand why the emotion is high and the stakes feel high. What does the debate about free speech look like, you think, going forward? I mean, what are the students maybe going to seek to do in terms of expression, whether it's artistically, protest movements, speakers? I mean, do you expect to see more of this? And is there a concern that speech could be curtailed in any way?
I don't think we'll see free speech being curtailed, but we may see more clashes like these. For example, I saw an event on Facebook the other day for the College Republicans event, another event on Uyghurs coming to testify. So I don't know what kind of tensions or source points that might bring up. But at the same time, I have increasingly been speaking to students who are beginning to see the need for us to learn how to have civil dialogues, even about issues that are as emotionally fraught as this. So I'm optimistic because of that.
Okay. Selena, when in your mind is a line crossed with speech or art or speakers or any sort of these public events? Or in your mind, is the line pretty far? In other words, is there any kind of speech that you're uncomfortable with that you're seeing on your campus right now?
Right now, the kind of like, it's more like the tension that's going on rather than like a speech or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's like, the way that people are kind of labeling others, it's not a very healthy environment that I want to see on campus. It's not like something that people advocating like anti-China is a healthy thing on campus, I would say. It's like we want civil discussion to happen, but not necessary to that extent.
To the extent that it picks up a fully anti-China vibe, is that what you're saying?
Close to that.
Okay.
Because I realize a lot of students that have been like commenting on Facebook, they're being supportive towards like humanitarian crisis over the world. But at the same time, the thing that they also focus is like something close to like an anti-China vibe. So I don't know how to take on that.
So is it your perspective then that supporting people who may be suffering shouldn't also come with hating other groups of people?
I would say on the campus situation, it's not good to kind of have that hate towards a group of students on campus.
Okay. Samson, how do you view the question of what speech is going likely to look like on your campus, and does any of it concern you?
Yes, it does, because there are a lot of hateful content that's going on right now, and I feel like the school here should all about peace and love, and that's what the Chinese Student Association has always been supported. And
what's an example of like the kind of stuff that you say is hateful that you're seeing?
A lot of labeling, a lot of stereotyping, commenting on Facebook about labeling the Chinese students, all Chinese students to the Chinese Student Association and the Chinese Student and Scholar Association. There are a lot of misunderstanding there. And also at the same time, misunderstanding, like I said before, the Chinese students are automatically being labeled as pro-Beijing and pro-CCP.
And then, therefore, anti-Tibet or anti-Hong Kong by association? Is that the assumption?
That's their assumption.
Right, yes. The assumption. Okay. Mm-hmm. But what would you then say, Samson, to people who might, you know, take a different view that we don't want anyone to feel hated, but we want to support human rights, and sometimes this is going to get prickly. This is going to get difficult.
Yes, I would say, like, I would definitely encourage my Chinese Student Association members and potential a lot of my Chinese friends to talk to other students on this campus. Also, other students on this campus need to keep open-minded and come talk to us, because I still believe this is due to a cultural thing that the Chinese people and Chinese students usually stay quiet for those things. But that obviously doesn't mean we don't support whatever is right. And that definitely needs further discussion, and we need to talk to them. They need to talk to us.
Hmm. Well, as we get ready to wrap up, Matthew Burns, what is the university's general perspective on free speech, and if ever, when to draw a line?
Our perspective on that is to be very hesitant to draw lines for speech other than protected speech and unprotected speech as it's already been defined. What's interesting in this case is that this accusation of censorship, I'm used to as an administrator being leveled against me and having to justify that when it's student to student now, mm-hmm. And asking the university to step in. Unless there is a violation that's going on, I think we're pretty much hands off. We will help to the extent that we can and are asked to in the dialogue, very difficult dialogues that go on. We have a certain level of expertise in helping to facilitate those. We've heard reference to John Osberg, who has helped in that. And so that's our responsibility, I think, is to assist in that dialogue, but to remain relatively free from intervention when it comes to students speaking with each other. We can certainly confront speech that is hateful or stereotypical. That doesn't mean that that's not free speech, though.
Okay, and is there anything that's happened regarding these issues in the last 6 to 12 months that you look back and wish the administration had handled differently?
Oh, I think we probably could have intervened sooner. I mean, I've seen Samson all semester, maybe Selena. I probably haven't paid attention enough to the Hong Kong Students Association to get them into my office to talk about what kind of how can we be helpful to both support you but also support the dialogue that's going on. So, you know, it's a busy semester, so I'm not going to make excuses for that. But I can look at Selena and say, you know, I know Samson pretty well. I've talked to Samson a bit. Selena and I probably have not had as many conversations as we could have had.
Thanks for being here, Matthew. Sure. I know the students appreciate it, and so do our listeners. Thank you very much. Matthew is a Dean of Students at the University of Rochester. Samson Hao, President of the Chinese Students Association at the University. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Selena Xu, who's President of the Hong Kong Students Association at the University of Rochester. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And once again, our gratefulness and the outstanding reporting from Efwa Ajari-Kumi, third-year student at the University of Rochester, contributing writer for City Newspaper. Wonderful job on this, and thanks for taking the time.
Thank you very much.
Our thanks as well to Emma Ray Stein, our intern who helped put together this program and did great work behind the scenes, as always. More connections coming up.